You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Without spoiling anything, I can reveal that the main narrator of Melanie Sumner's latest novel, The Ghost of Milagro Creek, is dead. She is a deceased Jicarilla Apache medicine woman who raises two boys, one Hispanic, the other American Indian. They're best friends until the arrival of a white girl triggers a violent spiral. It's published by Algonquin Books, and I'm very pleased that it brings Whiting Award winner Melanie Sumner to our show today. Hi.
Hi, Leonard. I'm glad to be here.
Now, you went to school in Chapel Hill in Boston. You teach at Kennesaw State, which is outside of Atlanta. How did this novel come to be set in Taos, New Mexico?
Well, I've been around. And
yeah, you've written about Africa as well.
Right. I lived in Taos, New Mexico for 2 years. And actually, I would still be there, but my husband was diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease at the age of 36 and told me he had 2 years to live. And I believe a lot of the novel, in my mind, the landscape is just imbued with his spirit. And I wrote it partly from grief and just longing for that landscape again.
And Ignacia Romero, the Apache medicine woman, has ALS.
Yes.
So is that what got you started thinking about this story?
I wanted to write this book about 9 years ago, when I heard I read a story in the newspaper in Taos about a guy who had escaped from the Taos jail, which, apologies to Taos, but I don't think that's that hard to do. He was out raking leaves in civilian clothes. And he had turned himself in because he shot his best friend. And the papers ran the story for a long time because no one could catch him, and he ended up killing other people along the way. And originally I wanted to write about a serial killer, and then I realized after some research that I had to write about somebody with a heart, so I chose Mr. Romero.
Well, my experience of Taos was of a tourist town with a lot of galleries showing art for tourists. Even the Native American Taos Pueblo seemed focused on tourism. Was I missing something?
Well, the locals are there, probably not in the galleries and the shops.
Well, it used to attract famous writers. At least
right.
they would go there every summer.
Right.
That's no longer the case.
I think it is, although movie stars have found it, so real estate has shot up. But it was the home of D.H. Lawrence and George O'Keefe.
Aldous Huxley was there in the
yes.
30s. Kenneth
yes.
Rexroth used to go
yes.
there. But this takes place in the barrio.
In the barrio, yeah.
Where tourists generally don't go?
No.
How have the different groups who have established the town and this area, I'm assuming that the original people are mostly living in the barrio, how have they adjusted to each other? Have they assimilated?
Well, there are tensions, and I tell my writing students that you have to have tension to create a story, so it worked very well for my book. We have the Native Americans who were invaded by the Spanish, and then the gringos came in. So it's all mixed together.
Although in this case, you have an Apache. They were latecomers to the area as well.
Well, yes.
Because the Pueblo Indians we're always threatened by Apache attacks.
Right. The Apache don't like walls, they say.
Mm-hmm. So, well, we have this Apache medicine woman, her son, Mr., and then his best friend is Tomas. He is Hispanic.
Yes.
And Tomas's girlfriend, Rocky, is a...
She's a gringa from Goose Creek, South Carolina. And as a Southerner always turns up in my writing, and I swear I don't intend to do that, but they show up.
There's an episode very early in the story that I think sets the tone for the novel, and that's Mr.'s susto. What's happening there?
Susto is loss of the soul, and I think that would equivocate with maybe depression, bipolarism, addiction. But the abuela is the narrator of the story.
That's the Apache.
Yeah, she's a Jicarilla Apache curandera or medicine woman. Her cure for susto or loss of the soul is to bury the 4-year-old child on the mesa up to his neck, and he is alive. And she prays for him when he's buried that Mother Earth will return his soul to him.
And it works?
Yes.
At times she's referred to as a witch. Would that be an accurate description?
Well, there's a lot of jealousy in the barrio and superstition. They call her a curandera when they need her help, when they have a bunion or a colicky baby. And then when they're angry with her, they call her a bruja or a witch.
Well, the practice seems to come from her Apache lineage, but also draws from Catholic mysticism. Has there been a blending in northern New Mexico of various Native American religions with Catholicism?
It's a fascinating blend. I love the way that they dress up their Marys and their apostles in really fine clothes, and they look like idols. There's a wonderful blend.
You're very specific in describing Ignacio's rituals. Did you get to know any healers when you were living in New Mexico?
I've known a few people there, and also in Georgia and around just in places I've been.
But we're talking here about Native American and Latino spirituality. Are they similar in any way?
I think all spirituality comes from the same place.
Okay. Well, but when I read about Mexican healers, although in many cases that also involves taking drugs, peyote and the
oh,
like,
yeah.
Am I talking about similar traditions?
Yes, I think so, because the cultures have blended quite a bit in New Mexico.
What adds to the mystical appeal of this novel is that your main character is dead. Does a ghost narrator offer you any freedom as a writer?
Well,
does it limit you?
Well, she does, because she can see all. She's omniscient. So that was a useful perspective. And when I needed something else, I used other forms of narrative, such as faxes or witness statements for the police.
Mm-hmm. Interviews.
Yes.
And you tell the story from various vantage points and in various timelines. This is not just a straight linear narrative.
No, and it couldn't be. I have to say that I rewrite a lot, and I rewrote this novel quite a bit. The time is disrupted because life is disrupted. The book becomes chaotic in the middle because of the murder.
It covers the years 1986 to 2001. Did Taos and its barrio change much over those 15 years?
I think they changed along with the rest of the country, but perhaps in a slower way, in part because the characters in my novel, and I'm not speaking for Taos, but these characters are quite poor, and in poverty things move more slowly.
And the dialogue comes across as terse and even harsh at times. Is that part of the style of the poor people of this area?
Well, that's the style of my characters. They come from harsh environments. They come from alcoholism and abuse and poverty.
My guest is Melanie Sumner, whose latest novel is The Ghost of Milagro Creek. It is published by Algonquin, available in paperback form. Would you read a bit for us?
I would love to. Thank you. I'm going to read from a place in the book where Abuela has died. The Gringa Rocky was Tomas's girlfriend, and she's left him because he's an alcoholic high school dropout. She's fled to a monastery. And Mr. and Tomas are fulfilling a childhood pact, I will die with you, which they make in Pig Latin. And they're making this double suicide attempt on the bridge beneath which they played as children. Hola, called Tomas from the bridge. He was leaning against the railing in the gray coat that was too small for him, wearing his new cowboy boots. For some reason, he had combed his hair. What up? Nada, said Mr. A dry stalk of chamisa poked through the ice in the creek. Something stirred in the shadows, a muskrat, maybe. He knew that he could turn around now, and Tomas would never mention it. I didn't write a note, he said. ¿Y tú?
This is WNYC. I'm Leonard Lope, talking with Melanie Sumner. Her book, The Ghost of Milagro Creek, is published by Algonquin Paperbacks. You sometimes use words in this book that we can't use on the air.
I'm sorry.
But you take on some pretty big themes: suicide, child abuse by a member of the clergy, homophobia, alcoholism, parental neglect, conflicted identity, and it's all written about very matter-of-factly. Just because that's what life is like in the barrio?
I think that's what life is like in a lot of places for a lot of people. But yes, in this particular barrio, it's often the consequence of poverty and and part of what I believe is our happening in our culture, that the family units are breaking up and it creates susto.
Well, the way characters experience violent events but accept them as a part of life reminded me of another writer who lived in Georgia, as you do now, Flannery O'Connor.
Yes.
I don't know, is she one of your influences?
She is my favorite writer, yes.
Because she had a way of taking everyday events and making them sound like Greek tragedies.
She did, and she wrote with purity, absolutely pure intention. There were no frills, and her characters still live in my mind.
You've published a collection of short stories, another novel. This is your second novel. Are you going to go back and forth?
Well, I have a novel set in Alaska that I'm
Alaska.
Working on now. Yes, I did live in Alaska for a little while.
So we can pretty much track where you've been over the course of your life by where you set your stories.
Well, perhaps, but I'm a mom now and I have kids, so I've been living in Rome, Georgia for several years.
At Kennesaw State?
I teach at Kennesaw.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's was once like a community college, but seems to have taken on more and more respectability in recent years.
It is growing, yes, enormously. It's a university now.
This book is The Ghost of Milagro Creek. Milagro, M-I-L-A-G-R-O. What does
yes.
that word mean?
It means miracle, because this is a story of hope. It's a rough landscape, and there are some rough people in it, but Abuela believes in milagros.
And in a way, it's almost like what Preston Sturges was. Do you know the title of his film?
No.
It involved Miracle Creek. The Ghost of Milagro Creek, it is published by Algonquin as a paperback, and I want to thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Leonard.